Hello, Dreamers. It's Janine.
And Stephanie.
And welcome to The Course of Course, episode 46. I know it's been a few weeks, but we are back and we are ready to rock and roll. So one of the things I want to talk about, just opening it up, I know on our last podcast, we talked a lot about career and kind of my struggles with my current work environment, and you've talked a little about that. We had a couple questions from our Facebook listeners, which thank you very much. We really appreciate it. I think Natalie and Christine both emailed us, and I wish we could have gotten to you guys sooner. We just had other things happening. Life, one might say. But back to the career question. I think it was Christine that asked about what do you do if you're in a position where you're looking for a job and you're not really happy? What are some practical things to do? And so we were sort of brainstorming before we got on mic today on how we would answer that. One of the things I thought about, because I'm living through it right now, is I had to learn to get out of my own way. I kept trying to force the situation or control it, and it's like, I really want this new job, so I'm going to go for it. Well, you know, my script had a different plan, and this other job that I was looking for, it didn't quite manifest. It sort of did. It reared its head, and then it went back again. So it's been 6 months on and off. I've been looking for this other job. About 2 weeks ago, my potential new boss had reached out to me and said, hey, here's the situation. I really want you, but this is what's happening. It just felt like there were always these issues. But what I did experience in the 6 months of me not being very happy is it sort of forced me to look at my current job and go, you know what, this isn't so bad at all. At all.
You have a lot of freedom.
A lot of freedom. But the one thing I'd like to say is often I would be in a position where I wasn't happy, usually because I wasn't happy with the people around me, not necessarily the job itself. So for me, the lesson, at least from the course perspective, was to figure that stuff out. There's a reason why they are in my script. There's a reason why they've been placed in front of me. The best way to address it is to just deal with it.
Because changing the form isn't going to change the issue. It'll just follow you.
Exactly. I could get another job, but I'm sure other people will be cast in those same characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm there again, you know.
And it did.
And it did. And continues to do so. You know, if I could give any answer, I think that's what it would be. The course has really helped me, though, because it really has put stuff way more in perspective. I used to think much more in terms of ego, like, oh, these people are terrible. This is a toxic environment. Forgetting the fact that I created the toxic environment just for being in it, right?
Oi.
Oi is right. And if somebody had said to me, well, Janine, the solution to your problem is to just work it out right where you are, I would be like, what are you telling me? I'm miserable. But unfortunately, I suppose, it's a bitter pill to swallow sometimes, but it is true. I think it's a matter of pivoting where your perception is and saying, you know what, this is not really the issue that I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Looking back, I have a history of having jobs where there's always been one villain, this one person that I wanted to hate. And so it's like, oh, I hated that person. I hate this person. Well, the reality is it's me, and I got to stop this pattern. It doesn't make any sense.
I was thinking of my life being a video game, and that if I can remember that everything that's happening on the outside is something that I made up. And it reminded me of that Gary quote where he was saying, it's not really happening to me, it's happening by me. So that's a whoa.
That's very powerful.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to think that when they're in the midst of a difficult situation, because I don't want to own that.
Right. I'm allowing this. I invented this. This is just to kind of, in a way, make me pissed off and angry so that it would catch my attention so that I could realize, only because of the tool of the course, that it's not real, that we just created it because it's a way of separating us, and we're not separate.
I know.
It's just the oneness.
I mean, we've been doing this for a while now, certainly nowhere near the length of time that many, many people have put into it. It's still a struggle for me to continue to remember, hey, this isn't real. I'm making it up. These people who I want to punch in the face aren't bad people. I just cast them in my play.
One thing I've been working with in the last week is, how can I see this differently? We're all so identified with our ego because that's 99% of this experience, and it's always going to be there until we probably die or become enlightened, which hopefully we all will become enlightened. But until then, it's going to be the nag. It's going to be the wife that's always nagging at us, or the husband that we don't want to hear from. And one of the podcasts I was listening to recently on Pete Holmes was talking about the ego being the body's guard, like bodyguard, because it wants to keep the illusion going. And so I've been thinking, if I'm looking at the script through the eyes of God instead of the ego, which I'm programmed to, then the question is how can I see this differently? Which automatically will get me thinking, well, I could see it from a Holy Spirit, Jesus point of view. You know, so 99% of the day we're going through the ego point of view. But if we can do it through the HSJ point of view, I realize that it's more than just giving it over. It's not that simple, although that's a very important part of it. Like, I have no control because it is scripted, and please help me. But I was thinking about how giving thanks also helps us slow down. In the Buddhist and Hindu cultures, which I've been doing a lot of podcasts lately about all that stuff, they were saying that they have like 900 ways to say I love you. And during the day, they give thanks for every little thing. And I'm saying to my mind, like, I don't have time for that kind of stuff. I can't slow down and say thanks for everything. But then I thought, well, maybe I could slow down and say thanks at least for the food I'm eating. Like, thanks to the grower who farmed the food for me and the truck that brought it to me. And now I'm preparing it, and may it be at its highest vibration so that my body receives it. Like, I could think a little bit, but in giving thanks, it also is another bridge to thinking about God besides me having a problem and saying, would you please help me?
Right.
So, you know, the please help me is always a child is sticking up their hand saying, please help me. But giving thanks, I think, is another way of also creating the bridge.
I thought the question you had, how can I look at this differently, is so powerful. If we just stop and ask ourselves that question, how can I look at this situation differently? It gives us that opportunity to really observe, you know what I mean? Not judge, but kind of observe what's going on. Just like, okay, what if I just look at it from this different perspective?
As we've been trained through the course and through Gary, the ego is always the first to speak. So it would make sense that it's yelling at us as the nag. And if we take that moment to say, how can I see it differently, then we're shifting to the Holy Spirit script.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's something there. So I made myself new post-it signs to put up around the house.
And what do they say?
They say, how can I see this differently, question mark. And then below it, I just wrote, HSJ.
Can you make me post-it notes, please?
Yes. The other thing about giving thanks, I thought, it's almost like dating. It's a numbers game. So they say, like, the more guys you date, the better your chances are finding the right mate. Mm-hmm. So maybe the more times I give thanks, even if it's not going to be in that Buddhist Hindu sort of way, but just anything more than I already do.
Look at you. You've become quite the Buddha yourself.
I have been. Mm. I've been listening to the Maharaji, and there's a lot of people. Ram Dass.
Oh, yeah. Ram Dass. Remember Ram Dass?
That was his guru. Yeah. And I saw Ram Dass in Washington, D.C., probably like in 92, 93 when I was living there. Sold out. It was amazing. But I guess like a year later, he had a stroke and one whole side of him's been paralyzed ever since. He lives in Maui. They do big conferences over there and people travel over there.
When I was living in Cincinnati back in the day, I was working for a small kind of new age magazine newspaper thing. I was writing articles. I actually interviewed him.
Amazing.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No.
See, there's secrets. I interviewed Shakti Gawain too. So.
Oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm.
These are people from our past, really. Very into that for a while. But isn't the Maharaji the one that the Beatles were all over?
That's the Maharishi.
Oh, thank you.
And the Maharishi started Transcendental Meditation, which my whole family did when I was in junior high. Mm-hmm. And they were talking about the mantras that we get, and I guess they have a whole book of them, and I'm not sure how they assign them. I don't think I'll reveal mine, even though in a way it's never been a big deal to me until recently. But I like the idea that the sound, I've been using music a lot, and I downloaded Lama Sura Das's Buddhist chants as a way to help me unwind. So besides my Stephen Halpern music and my Nakai flute music and my Chinese lullabies, I now have more to my repertoire.
See, this is the difference between you and I. I just listen to country music.
I like my spiritual slowing music. I need to slow down.
I like to slow down too, but sometimes you just need to do some kicking.
Yeah, that's true.
Some shit kicking.
That's what the Clash is for.
The Clash. You're into classical music. Classical means older than us. When's the Clash been around? 20 years?
80s. Mm. Late 70s. In the London area. I ran into Joe Strummer one day when I lived there, but that's another story.
I want to talk about the Cindy and Gary Renard talk. They're down in Orange County this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be
tomorrow.
after the fact by the time this podcast mm-hmm. is uploaded. But anybody who's in the Southern California area, I hope that you can make it. I'd like to give as many plugs as possible to as many people as possible.
And they can go to the appearances page because mm-hmm. I notice they're going back to China again, which is
awesome. And they're going to be in Hawaii over the summer, which should be awesome. But I can't get that kind of time away. Although it would be nice. Hang out in Hawaii for the summer.
That would be.
But I do want to talk about my sister. My sweet sister wrote a book, a spiritual book. It is available on Amazon Kindle. It's just in Kindle form right now. It's called Glimpsing Ileana. It's by Lynn Rebman. So anybody who's interested, it's a great book. You can download it on Kindle. I think it's like $8.99 or something. I'd have to double check. So if there are any other authors or artists or whatever, please let us know. And we are more than happy to plug your stuff. Oh, the last podcast I talked about, some days I just want to sit in my fat pants.
Oh, yeah.
Eating Raisinets, watching TV. And yes. Our dear friend Mike Lemieux ended up sending me a huge box of Raisinets. It was such a sweet surprise. I came home from work and there's this box at my door. And I thought, I don't remember ordering anything. And it was really heavy.
Wow.
Very heavy. And I was like, what the heck? And I opened it and I went, what?
That's.
And it was a little note from Mikey.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is very so sweet. Thoughtful and mm-hmm. original and very fun.
You're a good guy, Mike Lemieux.
We love you.
Yes.
I was talking in my head about Temptations, and then I heard something which was really cool in the audio of the Course in Miracles text saying that temptation is a wish to make illusions real.
I like that.
Because I think of temptation as being like food or drugs or alcohol or something, but actually it's more than that. It's the whole bloody thing.
But that means our entire lives are just one big temptation.
It is, isn't it? That's the whole ego wanting to express in the body.
I'm always fascinated by people who want to stay in body. And you know what I mean? Like, oh, I don't want to die. I'm like, what the hell? Take me now.
I was talking to a colleague.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to a colleague. They had asked me about the weekend we had done with Jackie and Sin. And so I tried to explain to them the philosophy behind the course. And they got kind of heated saying things like, well, why wouldn't I want to come back here and have more experiences? Mm. Like, I love it here. I'd want to have more human lifetimes.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Crazy.
You know what? Maybe if I'm coming off a lifetime that everything was swell.
Yeah, which this one is for that person.
Yeah. Then I can see it.
But I was like, well, what if you come back as a starving person in Mexico with drug lords all around mm-hmm. you and people are getting killed everywhere? Doesn't matter. It's still an experience.
That's the one thing I think has really, really changed in me. The idea of I don't want to come back down again. I really don't. If I have to, I have to. It is what it is. But I'm going to do everything I can in this lifetime to get as far along the journey as I can.
Which reminds me of that bit I also heard in the course text audio about in the end of chapter 30. It was talking about if you've been doing the lessons and really trying your best effort, basically, in a nutshell is what it was saying, then don't worry. You are doing it right. And you have the power within you to transcend and to remember who you truly are. And don't worry. I mean, trust was something that's come up for me that I've heard talked about at workshops before. Trusting that what we're doing is enough because the ego wants us to doubt that I'm doing it right because it wants us to think we're doing it wrong. That we naturally as humans are curious about our future. You know, like I want to move and live in a different town and do a different job. I don't know what it's going to be or where it's going to be, but there's all this meaning-making machine part going on. And I don't know, just trusting that whatever's going to happen will happen when it's supposed to happen, which is kind of what you were talking about, the job. If you're going to switch jobs, it's already scripted. So just
get out of your own way.
Yeah, get a fart. But I do feel like there's some effort that one needs to put in. Like
the effort more is intention as opposed to, of course, you're going to have to do stuff like send a resume and things like that.
Well, like if I wanted to be a chef, I should go to cooking school.
Sure.
Or if I wanted to be a, you know, landscape architect, maybe I should take a permaculture class or mm-hmm. something. Or like I do think there's homework involved. And if someone wants to be an artist, I think The Artist's Way is a really great book. I love classes. I love education.
I do too. I listen to podcasts all the time and audiobooks. Maybe I get bored easily. I have no idea. But I enjoy having more information come at me. I'm somebody who takes a lot of information in pretty mm-hmm. quickly. And I'm able to kind of sort of digest it. and sometimes spit it back out. I don't know what a life would be like for me if I didn't have that, if I wasn't constantly learning or being curious. But going back to when we first got to the course, I remember us having conversations like, well, what if this isn't real? What if this, I mean, real in the fact that what if the course isn't
accurate or
yeah,
it's just another story.
Right. Because we had gone through the spiritual buffet many times over, and there was always something. So we did a search for God with the Edgar Cayce. So we were very much affiliated with Edgar Cayce. Mm-hmm. And then we started looking at other stuff, a lot of the Buddhists' information, and somehow we got to the course. So why do we think the course is the thing? And I think for me, it just felt like it was the thing more than any of the other stuff did.
That's for sure.
It made sense. Even though when you think about it, I've said this before, try to explain the course to somebody who knows nothing about it, you end up feeling like a complete fool.
Yeah.
Because it's just crazy talk. It's like explaining to somebody, okay, so here's the situation. What you're seeing right now isn't real. I'm not even here.
This is all a dream.
It's all a dream. And they're like, what? You're high.
Yeah, I liked it when Elizabeth Gilbert said, try not to explain. Like, you have a fan base. She does, at least. And so people who want to know what her story is will come to her, but don't try to tell your parents and your siblings because they don't want to hear it.
Right.
And then someone else said, one of the gurus had said that if one person in the family is on the path, that's enough.
Yeah, I can see that.
I've started calling Jesus my guru.
Yeah, totally. Well, I guess I'll just dovetail into this. I have talked about my significant other on this podcast for a while now. I'm going through this phase where I am working through, as Gwyneth Paltrow would say, consciously uncoupling. And let me tell you, that's not an easy thing. So it's trying to find the Holy Spirit within me and to lovingly kind of separate ties. I haven't really done it that well before. So right now I'm kind of working through that. Like, what does it look like? And what do I say? And what place do I need to be in? I've been in many relationships. I've broken up with them. They have broken up with me. I've been through this before. Mm-hmm. But I've never really gotten it to the point where I can, in the most high and loving sense, have been able to let go of someone and not have ill feelings.
I feel like you've been conscious, at least since I've known you, about leaving the other person feeling better than you've been left before.
Yes.
But it's like, how do we do it from a course point of view without incurring more karma?
Right. So,
especially because this person's a little bit hot-headed.
Yeah, there's an aspect there that I'm a little concerned about. You know, so it's kind of like allowing the Holy Spirit in and just trying to figure out how to look at this a different way. Right. So that's been my struggle, you know.
How do I see this differently?
Well, in all of our lifetimes, we have relationships, whether romantic or not, that come in and, you know, they run their course and then they don't, right? But quasi-romantic relationships are a little more heavy. There's a little more emotional heft in them. So we have friendships that come and go. And it's not, you know, it's like one of those things. You're like, okay, maybe I'll talk to them someday or whatever. But with a romantic partner, it's different. It's not as easy to sort of just say, okay, maybe I'll talk to you later, because there's so much other stuff that's wrapped in it.
Well, the person reaches out a lot all the time through texting and phoning and needing to be connected, and that's kind of the suffocating part.
Yeah, it's just
their instinct to keep coming back even when you've said, no, stay away.
Right, and I hate to say, I don't want to be too judgy about it, because when I say it, I'm actually being judgy about it. But we've had conversations about, you know, Jesus and how much Jesus means to me. And it was immediately confronting to him. So it's like the conversations are always shut down. And it's a huge part of my life. The course is a huge part of my life. I see Jesus as my mentor, my guide.
My guru.
And to not be able to share that with someone, it's a little hard for me. That's just one thing. But we're just in two different places. But I think everybody can say that in a relationship that's breaking up.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty common.
Yeah, people kind of outgrow each other and evolve in different directions. And so they're not really a fit anymore.
Yeah, and I don't want this relationship to be sour. I mean, I love this person very much. I wish them absolute the best. It's just trying to figure out how to get to a place where he can be okay and not feel, because I think when relationships romantically break up, the ego is so huge. jumping in like, oh, I hate you, and I could do better.
Like they're not going to break up with me, and they just keep calling.
Right? How dare they? Right? So it's like trying to transcend that with somebody who seems a little more connected to their ego. So this should be fun. So I will let everyone know on my journey on each podcast how that's going.
I feel like because you see him Monday through Friday, it also complicates it. Like. Right. If that wasn't there, then you could probably never see him again. But because he's in your life, you will be seeing him.
Yeah, and the reality is I would love it if we could stay in each other's lives, just more at a slight distance.
Friendship.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, having been through breakups before, there's always that period of time where you just have to kind of get some distance between each other.
It's healing. And
you're right. And wait for that immediate kind of ego hurt to dissipate. I have that to look forward to. So we'll see how that unfolds.
May the force be with you.
Yeah, I think I need that. So we'll see. So one of the, I know this is like a swift change of topic, but I do want to talk about this before our podcast ends. The U.S. political system is a fascinating play that's playing out in front of our eyes, but the primaries are happening, and we just had one in my home state, which is Ohio. And what I found fascinating about it is Ohio is the only state at this point that John Kasich has won. He's the governor of Ohio, so it sort of makes sense. But we start hearing from all the commentators that it looks like, at least on the Republican side, it's going to go to a contested convention, which is going to be even more fascinating to watch ego play out. I think the whole Republican side, that play is amazing and so entertaining.
I was kind of having an epiphany of this is karma because they've messed with the last 8 years not dealing with anything in Congress, so it's payback time. Like they're in shambles now because they weren't working very well together. They had no unity, no teamwork, no community. It was just factions and they just hated everyone. And so now they still hate each other and they're still in factions.
But I find the juggernaut that is Donald Trump to be a fascinating factor in this election cycle because he really is way kind of fringe. Not a traditional politician, not even a politician. He's a businessman.
He's a bully is what he is.
But his rhetoric is so divisive, and yet somehow this population in the United States seems to be voting for him, which it's mind-blowing to me.
I agree.
He's hitting a nerve. He's hitting a nerve with some segment of the population.
I don't see how he can say the things that he says and that he's still winning.
I know.
Whether
that's why everybody's confused about
it. Ethnic or race,
somehow he's getting away with it. But I also think they all have a big ego, but wow, this guy's got like the ego of all egos, which in some ways I admire because he's like, whatever, I'm just doing my thing. He's not really kind of bound by political convention.
It might take getting an off one in the office for people to look at how our system works and realize it's broken and it doesn't work.
Could very well be. I mean, there's a reason why in all of our scripts that this is happening and how lucky we are to be in body right now to watch it all play out.
I'd still rather be in heaven.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, I guess we'll find out as this thing progresses what's going on in the political system. So we'll talk about that next time. I will talk about my conscious uncoupling process, talk a little more about career. And
just trying to find peace within.
Peace within. That's the important thing. All right, listeners, thank you so much. And we so appreciate your comments on Facebook. We read all of them. We wish that we could meet all of you individually. It would be great if at some point we could tour around the country/world and meet everyone.
Good.
Yeah. It's like the other end of the spectrum. All right, everyone. Thank you very much and have a great evening.